Well, here it is. Letter to the end. February 12th, 1980. Truth for Today Bible Class. Now, we have been studying in Exodus, and I think we were ready to start chapter 34 tonight. But I'd like to do just a little bit of recapitulation, a little of it, because at the very best, one can get a little confused about the events, the order of events, and what and when and so on things happen. there are a lot of people, without thinking, believe that the night that they ate the Passover lamb was the night they crossed the Red Sea. And yet when you consider the fact that they traveled from Ramesses to the Red Sea, a distance of close to 80 miles, they didn't do it that route. And they couldn't have started even until after midnight, and the firstborn in Egypt were killed. So, we're going to have to take a little look at that, and since we've been taking it up in pieces, starting at chapter 12, and sort of recapitulate. Now, I've been using my map here, and I will warn you about maps. Now, remember that this Exodus from Egypt was in 1491 B.C., almost 2,000 years before Christ. And we're getting close to 2,000 years after. In other words, it's not going to be long. It'll be 4,000 years since Israel left Egypt. Now, there can be a lot of changes in the land and in the sea in 4,000 years. And you may look at some maps and you will see some of these names on them and a question mark. Sometimes you see the same name twice with a question mark in different locations. And the reason for that is that hardly any of those places exist anymore so they can be identified. Now that's our difficulty. Now they have a pretty good idea of where Ramesses, Egypt was. But Succoth is gone. Etham is gone. And Pi-Hahiroth is just a guess. Probably a couple of miles from the present city of Suez, but we don't know. Our authorities, so-called authorities, do not agree even on where the place was at the Red Sea that they crossed. And that, no doubt, has changed a great deal from that day to this, because it is rather evident from historical accounts that the Red Sea extended further up north and west than what it does now, and that the Bitter Lakes were a part of it. Well, you see what we're up against when we try to really give you a map. But, as I said, roughly speaking, it's just pretty close to 80 miles from Ramesses, where they started out from, where they gathered together and made their start, till they got to the Red Sea, wherever it was. It wouldn't have been very far, up and down, not many miles difference. Now let's go back to the chapter 12 in Exodus. I might just add this now so that you can be ready. But as near as I can figure out from the days that are given, so in the Bible, that it took them a week to make the trip from Ramesses and across the Red Sea. A week. It may be that when they killed the Passover lamb, it was a Sabbath. And so they made their journey the next day afterward and started out. It may be that they even crossed the Red Sea on about the first day of the week. That is, they started in at 6 o'clock in the evening And so they had been able to pass the Sabbath probably, I wouldn't say in peace, because they were in terrible fear. Pharaoh had caught up with them, with his army and so on. And, of course, they didn't know what to do for Moses told them. So you can figure on just about a week, starting out after the Sabbath, and getting across from Ramesses, and getting across the Red Sea just after a Sabbath. Now keep that sort of mind. Now, if you want further light on this, if it can call it light, because, as I say, all historians and so on are guessing, and so am I. But this is as near as I can come to it from what I read. That they did make this trip in about a week, starting just right after the Sabbath. And that they would speak of things here that I'll have to explain a little bit. I better not anticipate too much. Let's just turn back to 12:1. If I anticipate too much, get you mixed up. Exodus 12:1. Now, this is some time before the Exodus. Several days before. I'm getting the wrong chapter here myself. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month. Now this month. And that was the month of Nisan. In the spring. Just about the time that the day and the night would be pretty close to equal. And of course, remember, in that climate, nearer somewhat the equator than what we are. There wasn't the difference between the day and the night as we had. They were more nearly equal. And of course, when you go on the equator, why, they are equal. They don't have a long day in one part of the year and a short day in another part, and so on. Or get in some parts of the earth and have one day and one night practically in the year. That's about what it amounts to. This month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. And we explained this, that this was their religious year. It had to do with all their feasts and so on. Now remember again that the Jewish year consisted of 12 or 13 months. More 13-month years than there were 12. Because they were following the moons. And a moon is a little over 28 days. 28 fraction. And so each month in the Jewish year began a new moon. Now you see it wouldn't take very long, but shortening it that much, that their Passover time had come too early for it to have a wave sheaf of barley. And so when it came too early to have a wave sheaf of barley, then they just put in a calorie month, and made it the next month after that thing. And that would come right. And so whenever the harvest came a little too early, they would skip a month and have their Passover. Well, now you see, since it always came at the time that they could have a wave sheet barley, by their years in the long run over a period of 2,000 years would come out just the same as ours. Because that season always came at the same time. A lot of people get all tangled up about calendars. They say, well, the Jews had a 360-day year, and it wasn't even that much. And then how would you figure out their years and our years, you see, and so on, not thinking if they put in those leap months, we call them, their calorie months, to make the year come out right for their feast. My, people make themselves a lot of problems and spend a lot of time working on the answer is very easy, obvious. So this will be the first month of the year to you. Speak unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, on the 10th day of this month. Now I want you to get this, because this is before the 10th day. In Exodus was the 14th, what the Passover was. So they're giving instructions to see beforehand what they were to do. So Israel is anticipating this by taking up a lamb on the 10th day, 4 days before the Passover, having it ready for it. Don't forget that. This didn't all just happen on the spur of the moment one night. They'd do all of this and leave the land and so on. It spreads over more time than that. In fact, when they observed the Passover in later years and they told the story of the leaving of Egypt and so on, all this would have to be taken care of. And if the household be too little for a lamb, and so on, they can families go together, we can speak. And you shall keep it, verse 6, until the 14th day of the same month, and the whole assembly of the congregation shall kill it in the evening. Now, does that mean that the whole congregation is to take one lamb and then they'll all kill it? I just said one for each family, or one for a couple of small families, and so on. All too often, they have that word it singular, when it means all the lambs. Also, you'll find the expression in the New Testament, kill the Passover. So they killed the Passover. That mean they did away with the Passover? Oh, that means killing the Passover lamb. You'll have to watch these idiomatic expressions. You could make a lot of error out of them a little while to start taking this real literally. In other words, don't take me literally in what I say, because I'm using idioms all the time too. And then the taking of the blood and putting it on the doorpost and the lintel and so on, and what there is eat, so on. And in verse 11, that's how you eat it. With your loins girded, your shoes on your feet, and your staff in your hand, you shall eat and drink. It is the Lord's Passover. Now, how soon after midnight they left, I don't know. But it couldn't have been before the morning watch, because they were not to leave the house at night. I'm skipping some of the directions you remember. So, we'll get that one straight. Now, down to verse 29. And it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on the throne, of the firstborn of the captives in the dungeon, all the firstborn of cattle. And here it happened. Hidden. Now they've already eaten, the children of Israel have eaten their Passover lamb after sundown, and they're still waiting. They know something's going to happen. They're to have the staff in hand, and everything all ready to go. All their belongings bundled up, their kneading troughs ready to put on the shoulder and go. And verse 30. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he called to Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise up. It's still night now. Rise up and get you forth among my people. Now, it doesn't mean that he went to them personally. He probably sent messengers to them. Ye and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. And also take your flocks and your herds, and as you said, be gone, and bless me also. So the order goes out. Now, how long would it take Moses to get runners to go, all the Israelites, from all their encampment, and tell them the news? So you see, it would be pretty hard for them to get going until morning, get all the news. As I say, there was a morning watch which gave them that time. This was watch is mentioned a few times in all this story here, the morning watch and the evening watch. Now, verse 37. We're still in chapter 12. Now, Rameses was the starting point. That seems to be where they'd all rallied together after the last of the plagues and so on, and ready to go. Now, this is right in the edge of Goshen, as near as we can pick. Now, the land of Goshen is just a little bit might be, we're not sure. And so the children of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 on foot that remained besides children. So between 2 and 3 million people on foot. Now they had some stuff with them because there's not a hoof left behind. And it says the mixed multitude went up with them too, and that was part of their undoing. Well, we see these mixed folks, these camp followers following along. Now, turn to verse 41. We have so many places where there are parentheses and going back and so on, it's hard to follow the story right through. And you might sometimes just like to take the Bible and mark the verses that tell the story so you can read it right straight through without all being a wayside sage. Now, verse 41, and it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, even the selfsame day it came to pass, when all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And it is a night to be much observed unto the Lord for bringing them out from the land of Egypt. This is the night of the Lord to be observed of all the children of Israel and their generations. Now, which night? The night that they started out and left Egypt proper, and I'll have to explain that now what. Their first trip. Now, I told you once that maybe it was 30 miles. I don't know, though we don't know exactly where these places were. And 30 miles is in a long, long way for Israel to travel in a day with their little ones, their stock and so on. But anyhow, it was from Ramesses to Succoth. And between those two laid the line of Egypt proper. Egypt, after all, was a pretty narrow land just along the Nile River. Now, they had their influence, the lands that they had conquered and so on outside, but when you look at some of the old maps, you'll find that it's colored just along the Nile River there and so on, includes Ramesses, but Succoth is outside. So then in their first march, they did go out of Egypt in that same day. The self-same day, as it says. So that much is clear. They didn't have to cross the Red Sea to leave Egypt. In fact, when they got across the Red Sea, they were still in Egyptian territory as far as their influence was concerned, because they had mines and so on and constructed roads down to the southern part of the Sinaitic Peninsula and had armies down there to protect their interests. And part of the time, it looks as if Israel had followed some of that road. In fact, when we go back several years before this and find Tagar fleeing back to Egypt, she was following one of the main roads, about three of them, and fled there, one from toward the south, and one from the center, and one from along the coast. All right, with that, we want to know what night. Because there's a night mentioned there in verses 41 and 42. It's the night of the Lord to be observed, all children of Israel and their generations. But now go down to verse 51. And it came to pass the selfsame day that the Lord did bring the children out of the land of Egypt by their armies. Not night, but day. And that's going on probably a week later when they crossed the Red Sea. Although that was done at night, but they were out of Egypt a day. Now, turn on to 13:20. We got them down as far as Succoth, and one had at least was one day's journey. And they took their journey from Succoth and encamped in Ethan in the edge of the wood. Now, from Succoth to Ethan, I have guessed it may be 20 miles. It's probably further. Probably Ramesses to Succoth is nearer that or less. And it may be that they took more than one day to go down. Of course, now that first journey, to get out of Egypt there that morning, really, we'd say morning, starting in the night, was pretty hurried, and they probably did go a little faster than what they would when they later on. And so they go to Ethan. Now, I don't know where it is. It places in different places, different maps. But it's, at least it's on the way to the Red Sea and toward Sinai. Now turn to 14:1. This is our next move. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pi Hahiroth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon, where it shall be encamped by the sea. Now we begin to get a little bit more more exact about this than we have about either Succoth or Ethan. Because it describes here and says that this Pi Hahiroth is between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal Zephon. Now Migdol is a fort. And it was on the Egyptian side, we would say, of the Red Sea. And it was at the end of the Great Wall of Shur, which ran there clear up to the Mediterranean Sea, as a defense against people coming down through Palestine and down into their land. And that wall was a great wall in this fort. There is some accounts of that fort in ancient times that it was built right over a big spring or well, so there's plenty of water. And so that would make a good place to station a bunch of soldiers, too. And so it's right near this fort, an Egyptian fort, that the Israelites make their encampment. And across the Red Sea is this other city that's mentioned here, Baal Zephon. Migdol on one side and Baal Zephon on the other. Now, if they crossed at that place, which many people think, it would have been a fairly wide place to cross as far as we can figure from the swamps and so on and the changes made in the land. It could have been that they went down the coast away and went across some other place. It doesn't make much difference. At least they camped by the sea, the Red Sea. Now, it's taken them quite a little while to get down here. It's a couple of days probably from Succoth on down to Etham, and a couple of days from Etham down here, or maybe more. And it's rather a good idea to think that they spent a Sabbath, a holy convocation is what they were supposed to have. Now, we would call it a Sabbath. They didn't call it a Sabbath yet because the Sabbath wasn't established until we hit the Sinai. But already the Lord had told them that they were to establish the 14th as a Sabbath. That is a holy convocation. And the beginning of the feast of unleavened bread. And so that would last a week. And so the last day was also a holy convocation. So it would make a Sabbath in that year at least. Whether it was their weekly Sabbath, that's another question. You see, we have a little difficulty about these things. They had different Sabbaths that fell on different days of the week. That weekly Sabbath, of course, is always the seventh day. Now, you see, again, a problem that we have. I'm rather the opinion myself that it was a weekly Sabbath. It was on the 14th and on the 21st. But I can't prove it. That is 1 and 2 in 14. Turn to verses 19 to 22. They're on their way across the sea, or through it. The angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them. And the pillar of the cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. And it came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and it was a cloud and darkness to them, that is, the Egyptians. But it gave light by night to these, to Israel. So if the one came not near the other all the night. Now, it took all night there for 2 or 3 million people to cross. And as I said once before, it probably was several miles across it, not just going over 8 or 10 close files. There was a long, wide place there they could all get across. And it was solid. I went across Dry Shot. That's always been a very marshy place, plenty place. But of course, it tells us that the water was congealed, and if it was, the mud was too. And so they went across Dry Shot. Well, let's see. Verse 19 to 22, I was given here. Let's see. Verse 21, and Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went in the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and on their left. And the Egyptians pursued and went in after them in the midst of the sea, even all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch, just before daybreak, the Lord looked unto the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels and began to mire down. That they drave them heavily. So the Egyptians said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fighteth them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch out thine hand over the sea, that the waters may come again upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots, upon their horses. And Moses stretched forth his hand over the sea, and the sea returned his strength. When the morning appeared, and the Egyptians fled against it, and the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. So there overthrew them great the morning daybreak. And the waters returned and covered the chariots and horsemen, all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea. The waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and on the left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw the great work which the Lord did upon the Egyptians. And the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. Now look at 15:23. We're following right on now. They got across the Red Sea. And going right on. 15:23. Well, we get 22 there first. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, named after that great wall that's along there between Egypt and Canaan. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. Now, how much they covered in 3 days, I wouldn't know. But all those people on foot, the little ones, and so on, if they made 3 miles an hour, they were doing real well. I suppose they made a 10-hour day every 30 months, and that would be a good day's work. Of course, now they didn't have an 8-hour day, they can see. Then verse 23, and when they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name of it was called Marah. And so Moses healed the waters there. Verse 27, that's the last verse, 15. And they came to Elah, next after Marah, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the waters. And I've explained to you about the meaning of the 12 palm trees and the 7, there are 12 springs and the 70 palm trees. 12 tribes of Israel being a blessing to the 70 nations mentioned in Genesis 11 and 12. Now notice chapter 16:1. And they took their journey from Elah. All the congregation, children of Israel, came into the wilderness of Sin. That wilderness was on south and a little east out of the wilderness of Shur. Sin or Zin. I believe the name means shrubs. Yeah, bushes. So it was a wilderness of a lot of bushes. Nice place for wolves to hide and snakes and bears and so on. But remember, if they were protected, and that's between Elam and Mount Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after the departing of the land of Egypt. All right, the 15th day, that'd be exactly then 2 months, you see, after their leaving. Now, wait a minute. It's just 1 month. That's right. Just 1 month from 15 to 15. And the whole congregation of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron, and there they got hungry, and so they had to have some meat, and that was where the manna came. Now, 17:1, they keep on going. And all the congregation of the children of Israel journeyed from the wilderness of Sin after their journeys according to the command of the Lord, and pitched in Rephidim. And there was no water for the people to drink. Wherefore the people did chide to Moses and said, give us water that we may drink. So there's where he struck the rock, and the people had water. And down in verse 7, he called the name of the place Massa Meribah. Well, we don't know where really that is, except I'm just saying in the Bible that it was down between there and Sinai, and really, folks, nobody knows where Mount Sinai is. They got one down there, it's named that and so on, but it doesn't fit all of the description. And so we're not even settled on to where Mount Sinai may be. It may be a long way north of where people think it is. And then, chapter 19, verses 1 and 2. In the third month, now we had 1 month here a little bit ago, now in the third month, I've been spending a lot of time on it. When the children of Israel were going forth out of the land of Egypt, the same day they came into the wilderness of Sinai. So they go. They've been going now in three different wildernesses. And most of your maps will give you some general idea for people. For they were departed from their feet, and they were come to the desert of Sinai, and it pitched in the wilderness. And then there Israel camped before the mountain of the Sinai. And this is where our story is. We have already had, since they were there, about the messages from the mountain, the covenant, and Moses telling them the words of it, and they said three times all these things they will do. And then Moses coming down from the mountain, he'd received the first tables of law and saw the golden calf and broke the tables, and so on. We've been through all of that. Now let's get over to chapter 34. We have a few minutes left here yet to start our lesson for tonight, but I just hope that these two remarks here about this recapitulation will help you a little bit in getting things straight. Now, as I said, your companion Bible will give you some idea of it. You can use it for a guide in appendix number 50 under number 7, the Roman numeral, B2I. I forget, I think it's page 162 or something like that in the appendices. All right, now we're chapter 34, is that right? All right. And the Lord said unto Moses, hew thee two tables of stone like unto the first, and I will write upon these tables the words that were in the first tables, which thou breakest. Now we kind of had an idea, you know, that God had written the first ones, and Moses wrote the second ones, didn't he? But here's what God says. He says, I will write upon these tables the words that are in the first tables, which I'll break this. That will get down after a while to what probably caused us a little bit of difficulty. And be ready in the morning, and come up in the morning to Mount Sinai, and present thyself there to thee in the top of the mountain. And no man shall come up with thee. He's going up to 70 elders, you know, Joshua, before, and sure, or Ur, not, no way, Hur, H-U-R, Hur, no man should come from thee, but it neither let any man deceive throughout all the men, neither let the fox nor herd speed before the men. And he, that is Moses, did hew two tables of stone like unto the first. Moses rose up early in the morning, and went up into Mount Sinai as the Lord had commanded, and took in his hand two tables of stone. And the Lord descended in the cloud, and stood with him there, and proclaimed the name of the Lord. Now that has been promised over in chapter 4, the ninth verse. Anyhow, it was promised for the Lord to do this and proclaim the name of the Lord. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed. Now this word Lord, each time, verse 5, and twice, three times in verse 6, is to quote. Just read it then. Verse 5. And Jehovah descended in the cloud, and stood with him there, and proclaimed the name of Jehovah. And Jehovah passed by before him, and proclaimed, Jehovah, Jehovah El, that is God, merciful and gracious, long-suffering, abundant in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity, and transgression, and sin, that will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the children's children, unto the third and to the fourth generation. A lot of folks have a misconception of that. If he visited at all on that first generation, on the father, it's a father to wipe them out. But if it's all spread out over about three or four generations, it'd be much easier. So you have to stop and think for a second. And Moses made haste, bowed his head toward the earth, and worshiped. And he said, now he had seen the glory of the Lord. And so now he says, if now I have found grace in thy sight, or since I have found grace in thy sight, O Lord, O Jehovah, let Jehovah, I pray thee, go among us, for it is a stiff neck too, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us for thine inheritance. That's quite a prayer, isn't it? Take us for thine inheritance. Well, and God just promised that sort of thing. He'd be a peculiar treasure to him, an inheritance, and be a kingdom of priests, a priestly kingdom. And he, that is, Jehovah said, behold, I make a covenant before all thy people. I will do marvels, such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. All the people on which thou art shall see the work of Jehovah, for it is a terrible thing that I will do with thee. A terrible thing that I will do with thee. Not a terrible, maybe in the way we think of it, terror inspiring and so on. But it is something way out of the ordinary. Observe thou, which I command thee this day. Behold, I drive out before thee the Amorite, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite. Take heed, thyself, lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land whither thou goest, lest it be for a snare in the midst of thee. So it hath anything but do with the inhabitants of the land. They're an evil, wicked people. In fact, they're the false seed. They're Satan's children. They're not to have anything to do with them. But why are they there? Well, that's a long question. You go clear back to Abraham staying 25 years in Haran, and the Canaanites ended in the land. And these are the same kind of people who had before the flood in chapter 6 of Genesis. the tares of the evil one itself. They're to test Israel. God has let them go there. He didn't destroy all of them. He couldn't. But he left them to test Israel to see whether they would obey him or not. And you and I today have this old evil world about us as a testing ground to see whether we will obey God or not, or whether we will run after the things of the world. We should always remember every day that we're being tested. But ye shall destroy their altars and break down their enemy, that is, pillage, and cut down their groves, and those are practically unspeakable. You'll find notes in your companion Bible will tell you about what those are. But it is a sex worship. And all the things that they did, connection with religious worship, and finding heathen worship, the sects always had the great deal to do. For thou shalt worship no other god, for Jehovah, whose name is Jealous, is a Jealous Jehovah. Lest thou make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they go a whoring after their gods, and do sacrifice unto their gods, and one fall in now eat of his sacrifice. And take down, and thou take, it is lest thou take, of their daughters unto thy sons, and their daughters go whoring after other gods, and make thy sons go whoring after their gods. Thou shalt make thee no molten gods. Over and over, God has to give these orders, it seems, and then they aren't heeded. Now, verse 18 just changes the subject a little bit. Going right back again to what we've been having. The feast of unleavened bread shalt thou keep. 7 days shalt thou eat unleavened bread, as I commanded thee in the time of the month Abib, for in the month of Abib they came out of Egypt. Now, Abib is another name for Nisan. And so in the Hebrew calendar, they're both names used for that same month. All that openeth the matrix, that is the firstborn, is mine. And every firstling among thy cattle, whether ox or sheep, that is male. But the firstling of an ass thou shalt redeem of the land, he's unclean. And if thou redeem him not, thou shalt break, then shalt thou break his neck. All the firstborn of thy sons thou shalt redeem, and none shall appear before me empty. Now, the redemption was, I believe, a half shekel of silver, I remember. And it was these very shekels that were melted down later on and used for to make the foundation sockets or the poles of the tabernacle. So the whole thing then was based on redemption, which is a good lesson to remember. Now, I think I'm going to have to be quitting here. I don't want to run over too much like I do sometimes. So, we will start in the next time of verse 21, about 6 days thou shalt work. As I say, Moses never organized a labor union. So they had a 6 day week. And I don't know, probably they had a pretty long day. You know, my grandfather used to get up around 3 o'clock in the morning, start his day's work. And he had pretty long hours. But that was the way to get ahead. All right, we'll have a little recess here. We're ready now to get into Matthew, the 7th chapter. If I remember right. Matthew, the 7th chapter. Matthew is over in the New Testament. First book. Sometimes somebody will listen to me and give them this kind of information. We have been studying the Sermon on the Mount, which is Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. Things we've only been able to do about one chapter and a lesson. Of course, course, we have observed from time to time.